Those of you who like to find a nice space inside. And as usual, there's plenty of space up in the front. I don't know why there's always this empty space. When I go to Singapore, they're right up in front of you, and sometimes there's no space, so they sit on the stage as well. Then it has atmosphere. Okay, and plenty of space in the front. Please come up. So, for the talk for this evening, again, just even 5 minutes before I came in here, I didn't really have any idea what I was going to speak about. And fortunately, somebody came and asked me a question just before I came in here. And it's a good question. And it gave me the subject for this evening's talk. And it's great to be able to have a talk using Buddhist principles to deal with problems of modern life in a way that makes this Buddhism practical, down to earth, and useful. So it's not just a religion which one puts on an altar and just worships it, but something you put into practice. So it helps many thousands of people. And also, tomorrow I'm going traveling again just to help other people, not just this place, to Singapore. On Sunday night, I'm going to be giving a talk on Sunday night on the subject of how to have a good night's sleep. And I thought, what a wonderful subject for tonight as well. Because somebody was telling me how they, in a hospital, how they were helping a patient with cancer have a good sleep for the first time in days. And what a wonderful gift that was. So the subject of tonight's talk is how to have a good night's sleep. And it is so important for our health, both physical health and emotional health, and for kids so they can perform well at school. Because you know, if you don't have a good night's sleep, number one, you're grumpy, you get angry just because you're tired. If you had a really nice night's sleep, you feel really good in the morning. It's just such, in such a good mood. Not only that, it means that whatever you have to do the following day, you can perform well. You know, you don't make so many mistakes, you're not so irritable, and I'm sure it's so much better for your physical health when you can rest at night. Imagine just trying to get by, you know, with insufficient sleep. You know, that mental tension transfers into your body. It must have really, really significant effects, bad effects on your health. So the idea to have a good night's sleep is a beautiful sort of thing to know the ability to how to do that. And in fact, I've gone on the record to say if anybody wants to make a lot of money, you can buy a nice center somewhere, a nice block of land, put a few chalets on that. You don't have to teach meditation. You don't need to have any counseling or psychologists there. All you need to have is comfortable beds. Just a place where someone can go and sleep without any worries. Make sure that it is totally shielded from mobile phones so you can't get any SMSs, no tweets, nothing. And all you can, and even you can have your breakfast at any time of the day, 6 o'clock at night if you want. You can have lunch at any time, dinner at any time. So you have no schedules at all. You can just get up when you want and go to bed when you want and just sleep without any having to get up at a certain time. You don't have to have any worries. What a beautiful thing that would be. Just like a sleep retreat. Would you want to go to a place like that? Yeah, of course. You see, the market is there. Just need to have somebody with a bit of nous and a bit of money to buy the place and just set it up. And just say, okay, here you guys, just go and sleep. Nothing else. So, number one, to get a good night's sleep, because none of you do get enough sleep. That's a given. And so, if you can't find a place like that, all you've got is your home, you know, which is really noisy sometimes. So, you know, try and find a quiet place in the house to sleep. There's a story which I told some time ago, and I think you've all forgotten it now. It's a very funny story, which somebody sent me, that somebody came home from work And they just, not from work, from the shops. And they had their hands and their arms full of shopping from wherever they'd been. And as they just opened the door, just, trying to sort of keep the bags from falling out, a big dog ran past them into their house. And he couldn't stop the dog. She sort of put her things down, closed the door, and tried to find out where the stranger dog had gone, and it was in one of the rooms, curled up in the corner, fast asleep. And, it was a nice dog. It wasn't sort of a stray, because it was obviously, it was clean, had a collar on, was well kept, and it was just a lovely, big Labrador dog. And a lot of people like dogs. I like dogs. And if someone comes in and it's asleep, you don't want to disturb. Sleep. It's a nice little dog. So she just let the dog sleep in her house, and then after a couple of hours, she heard the dog got up and did a little bark, to open the door. So she opened the front door and the dog left. Simple like that. The thing is, it happened the next day as well. When she came home, the dog was waiting, opened the door, and the dog ran in right past her, went into the same corner, and curled up and went to sleep again. And if that happens, you tend to say, okay, dog, you can come and sleep in my house because it's such a nice dog. But after three or four times of this dog coming into her house and finding a nice place to sleep, she started to wonder, where does this dog come from? Who owns it? And why on earth does it come into my house at almost the same time every day? So she was a very smart lady. She wrote a note, saying, I don't know who owns this dog, but it's a beautiful dog and it's very welcome to come into my house to have a sleep. It's coming in every afternoon to sleep for 2 hours. I just want to know, just where it comes from. And she folded the note and put it in the dog's collar. So when the dog went away, it took the note with it. And the next day, the dog came back, went into the corner of the room to curl up and have a sleep. It had a new note in it. It was the reply. And she opened the piece of paper, and the reply was this. This is my dog. We just live a couple of blocks away. My dog lives in the home with a very talkative wife and 5 children, 2 of which are under 5 years of age. It obviously comes to your house to get some peace and quiet. Can I please come too? And that's a lovely story of modern life. And you can understand how the dog felt. 2 kids of 5 years of age, under 5 years, they just play around with that poor dog and don't give it any rest at all. So even the dog just wanted to catch up with its sleep somewhere. So first of all, if you can find a quiet place in the house where you can sleep, that's number one. But sometimes we just have to make do with what we've got. And even if you have a quiet place, why is it that sometimes people just can't, sleep at night? And one of the reasons, obviously, is we need to know how to relax. And the first little thing I will say is that many people in my travels over the world, they actually tell me, many people, not just one, that before they go to sleep at night, they put on one of my talks, on their iPods, and they listen to it, and it sends them to sleep. And I still really haven't figured out whether that's a compliment or a criticism. But in the end, they get a good night's sleep, so well done, I'm happy. But I don't think it's a case of boring. I think sometimes just the tone of your voice and the reassurance and the kindness and the message of relaxation and peace and letting go which comes out in these talks, I think that is perhaps the biggest ingredient, which means a person, they hear this, just relax, let go, make peace, be kind, don't worry about anything. Live in the present moment, just who knows what's going to happen next. Good, bad, who knows, just let it all go. And I think that, more than anything else, relaxes the person so that they just have a very, very good night's sleep. It's putting the right message in. Because the message which many people take into their sleep with them is usually a very negative, worried message about life. And those of you who've been here long enough know there's hardly any negativity here. It's always just positive messages all the time. And those positive messages are so important to take into sleep with you. Otherwise, when you have any negativity at all, the body will tense up and the mind will tense up with worry. So that little message is very good. But if you don't have any talks, you don't want to put these earphones or these little pods in your ears to be able to listen to these things at night time, just you can do the thing yourself just by learning how to, number one, relax your body. Because there is a lot of physical tension stored in the body from the negativity of the day. And I say the negativity of the day because if you had a very good day, a happy, positive, joyful day, you find your body is relaxed. Later on I'm going to hopefully just to make that strong connection between happiness, positivity, joy and the relaxation of your human body. But if your body is tense because you had a really difficult day, lots of things have gone wrong and it's not your fault, and sometimes you can feel your body very tight. Just those of you who know a little bit of meditation and notice the way that I teach in the beginning of this meditation, feel your body and relax your body first of all. Sometimes you can actually feel that tightness in your legs or in your back or wherever else it is. And a lot of times that is what stops you getting a good night's sleep. I know this person because sometimes I do have to run around and administrating things, talking to people, counseling and all the other stuff which I have to do in my life. And sometimes when I lie down, I can actually feel this, like a tightness in my legs. And I know if I can feel that tightness, I will not be able to go to sleep unless, first of all, I learn how to relax my own body. And for those of you who have been here a long time, sometimes I've taught that relaxing of the body through a sweeping meditation. And I'll just mention it in brief here, but I believe that on our website you can actually download the sweeping meditation. So if you really want to get into this, it's freely available on the BSWA website, a sweeping meditation, so that you can practice this very easy method to relax your body so you can get a good night's sleep. How it works is you start becoming aware of parts of your body. Part by part. Instead of trying to relax a whole body all in one go, you just focus on one part of the body and then another and then another and relax them in order. And I usually like starting with a person's toes. Now this is a weird thing. You would think your toes are pretty relaxed already, but you've never really asked your toes, how are you? Because you take them for granted. Of all the parts of the body, that's the furthest from your head, where most of you live, and it gets the least attention. So sometimes you can do it now, don't need to look at your toes. Can you feel your toes now? If you can't feel them, then wiggle them and get some contact with that part of your body. And once you can feel your toes, relax them. When you can feel things, we call that mindfulness. And mindfulness will be able to give you feedback. If you just will those toes to relax, the feeling actually changes. And you can notice, yes, it is relaxing. It's getting more easy, more comfortable, more peaceful. It starts to feel better. Now, I like to start off with the toes because, they're a long way from the body, but they're not really that important. I know you get cancers of the breast, cancers of the colon, but I never heard anyone get cancer of the toe. Maybe it's there, I'm not sure, but it's a sort of easy object to start with. And you get heart attacks, you don't get toe attacks, you don't get cirrhosis of the toe or whatever, so it's a pretty easy one to start with. But once you start with that, then you work up the body to your feet. And you learn to notice these sensations in just that one part of the body and relax your feet. And you'll be surprised, because this mindfulness always gives you the feedback and notice the sensations in that part of the body change, you will notice actually you can feel relaxation happening. It surprises you. Yes, I can, by an act of will, No, by this wanting to be comfortable, wanting to relax, I can relax my own feet. And they feel so much better afterwards. And then you go up to your ankles and relax them. And then I go up to my calves, where a lot of the tightness and tension is, and I relax my own calves. It's not that hard to do. I'm mindful of them and relax. And all that tightness disappears. Then my knees, the thighs, the butt, the waist, and all the stuff inside that area of the body. And then I go a little bit higher, below my chest, above my waist, then to the chest, and then to the shoulders, and down the arms, down to the hands, back up to the shoulders again, the neck, the head, relaxing everything, stage by stage. You can get all the details, you know, off the internet, off our website, the sweeping meditation. And usually, for me anyway, before I get to my bottom, I'm totally asleep. I never get that far. Because I just relax all the tightness in the body. And when it's relaxed, it's so easy to fall asleep. Because you notice it's that tightness prevents the brain from turning off. There's just business to be done, and the brain just won't let it go. Now, that particular method of sweeping meditation, a psychologist friend in Sydney said that she started a company called sleeplikeababy.com on the internet. And she teaches exactly the same which I have just taught you. But she charges for it. I'm undercutting her market. But I don't mind, because she says she's made a fortune already out of this. Because she says 100% success rate. People with insomnia, people who've never been able to have a really good night's sleep. Just learning how to relax your own body is a miracle. And you've never been taught that before. You're never told it's possible. When they say relax, you try and relax the whole thing all in one go. Which means, you know, there's parts of the body you don't notice and you don't learn how to relax them stage by stage. That little bit of relaxation meditation is brilliant. You can relax so much of your own body. And just as an aside, I love teaching that to cancer support groups. Because I don't know how many, what the percentage is, say, of women who will have breast cancer. Unfortunately, that's a disease of our modern times. When you get to that part of the body, you can relax your own breasts. Have you ever tried that before? You think, no one's told you that was possible. You can have sensations feeling that part of your body. And just by an act of will, just relax. Open up, let go. Any tightness, loosen up. Any knots, expand. You can actually feel that part of your body, just that one part of the body, opening up, relaxing, becoming at ease. Anyone who knows, you know, Asian medicine, you know, Tai Chi or whatever, you know that you're releasing channels of energy when you relax. When you tense up, the healing power of the body is obstructed. And just doing that much, the cancer groups which I teach this to, they get really excited. It's something you can do, and you can actually feel it working. Just relaxing parts of the body one by one. And I also can't help but telling a story. I usually tell this on retreats, but you know, I'm telling this here as well. I don't know if I told this recently, but this was a powerful personal experience when I had the food poisoning a couple of years ago. Did I tell that here recently? Okay, I'll just go through it very briefly. Food poisoning in my guts. You know, just enormous pain and agony and cramps. And I just felt that sensation in the body and just relaxed the whole thing. It took 20 minutes. I remember that so clearly. 20 minutes and the whole thing had disappeared. There's no pain there at all. Totally free. Like you never had any food poisoning at all. And it was, you know, full-on agony, cramps, rolling around on the floor, food poisoning. It's amazing what you can do to relax your own body. But here this is not so much to do with healing. That's another subject altogether. But just the mindfulness of your body and learning how to relax it little by little can very easily get you into a really, really good night's sleep. However, that's with the body. There's also the problem of sleeping is the anxiety which we take into sleep with us. It's The anxiety, yes, it does create the tension in the body to begin with. So you know, this bodily feeling is a secondary phenomena. The main cause is the anxiety and the stress of our life. But you know, at least you can attack the problem just by relaxing your body. But if you want to go to the core of it, it's, now why are we so anxious and worried? And again, it is because we have a very negative nature. When we look at the future, what do we look at? All the things which might go wrong. When we look at the past, what do we remember? All the things which have gone wrong. How many of you, think of the past day or the past week and think of all the wonderful things which have gone right this past week? Do you really pay much attention to that, honestly? Or do you really pay attention to all the things which have gone wrong in the last week? And if you're really aware enough of what you focus on, as human beings living in this Western world, we focus on the faults, on the mistakes, the things which go wrong in the past and in the future. That is called guilt, anger and anxiety. And that is one of the reasons why when we go to sleep at night we have all this negativity which has been built up over the day. And so what we need to do is just basically in life just change that attitude. And when you go to sleep at night, remember all the wonderful things which have happened today. People say, oh, come on. No, do it. It's not that hard to do. All you're doing is changing your perception. Instead of looking left, looking right. That's as simple as it is. And just deliberately bringing up the great things which have happened to you today. The beautiful breakfast or the wonderful cup of tea or that stupid joke someone told to you today. It's a good invitation for me to tell a joke, but I don't think I've got any new ones this last week. So you have to sort of put up with no jokes this week. This is a joke-free week. I usually, when I go overseas, I try and get some more jokes for you, but not this evening. But just remember things like that. That actually makes, you look at the happiness of the past. And a lot of the times, all we need to do is to get that first positive memory of the past. And with one positive memory, the next positive memory comes up, the next positive memory comes up, and actually we're filling our mind with all the wonderful things which have happened today. And there are many wonderful things which have happened. Don't always think, oh yeah, you're a monk, wonderful things happen to you, but me, it's all misery. Ever since I got up this morning, everything went wrong. Everything. How it can't be that way. Something worked. I remember here's a good joke. Okay. There was this guy who was so positive. He would never say a bad word about anybody. And that really, that really upset his fellow workers. You can't say everybody is okay. And you can't say, what about Adolf Hitler? Say something good about him. Without any hesitation, this very positive-minded guy said, he, Adolf Hitler, was a leader in his field. That's why I'm being positive anyway. He's certainly number one in what he did. But anyhow, you can always find something positive if you get into that mood. And once you do get into that mood, of positivity, it means you start remembering all the good things which happened in the past. And also, when you look at the future, you start to think of all the wonderful things which might happen in the future. And to give you an example, a story which I was writing the other day, it's an adapted from an old Sufi story, that once, a few years ago in a different country, there was this monk. And he was very, very compassionate and wise, but somewhat unorthodox. And whenever you're unorthodox and you try and get rid of the baggage which is accumulated from all religions, sometimes you make a lot of enemies. And just like me, he started teaching there are two religions in the world. Only two religions. The first religion is the religion which bends the truth to fit their faith. And the second religion is what bends their faith to fit the truth. I think you can understand what I mean by those two types of religion in the world. Ones which their faith is so important, no matter what the truth is, what the facts are, they will bend their facts to fit their faith. And the other one, no, they bend the faith to fit the facts. And he said he was a follower of the second religion. Any ritual, any ceremony, any dogma which was proven by science or by experience to be wrong, he would be willing to abandon it without any hesitation. Even the most cherished traditions, if they were against the confirmed evidence of life, he would abandon it. And now that's really what a religion like Buddhism should be. Always bending their faith to fit the facts. Always be willing to change when the evidence is compelling. However, because he was like that, he did make many enemies amongst the traditionalists. So much so that the traditionalists tried to destroy him. And so they collected many of the talks which he gave. And they collected some of the statements which he had said, out of context, of course, and proved that he was a heretic. And so the poor guy had to stand a trial. You know, because like a monk like me, I say so many things. You know, there's over 1,000 of my talks on the internet. I'm sure that anybody can actually get a sentence here and a sentence there and put them together and just, you know, even call me a terrorist or something. So that's what they did to this guy. And he was on trial. And the evidence was put in such a way that the poor guy was sentenced for heresy, with the penalty being death. And when the judge handed down the sentence, the monk replied, "Oh, that is such a pity. That is such a shame, because I was just about to teach, you know, the judge's wife how never ever to argue with the judge ever again. I know this. I was going to teach a type of meditation which teaches wives to be compliant. But now I won't be able to do that anymore." And the judge said, "What? Can you actually do that?" And the monk said, "I know many types of meditation. It's easy." And the judge said, "Okay. Because I want my wife never to argue with me. I'll give you 12 months stay of execution if you can teach my wife not to argue with me ever again. And after 12 months, if she's still argumentative, I personally will attend your execution." And the monk said, "Okay, thank you." And then, bang the gavel, court adjourned. And so the monk went out. He had 12 months of freedom. And his disciples say, "Well, can you really do that? Is there a type of meditation which stops wives arguing with their husband?" And he said, "Of course there isn't." "Well, I don't know any. Do you know any?" "Well, why did you say that?" "Well, I don't know. I might find one in the next 12 months. Who knows what you might come up with? And anyway, you know, the wife might die herself. And that'll stop her arguing. Or I might die of natural causes. Who knows what might happen in the future? I've got 12 months of extra life." Now that is positive thinking. So, there you are, a guy sentenced to death. And what does he do? He gets out of it by a bit of positive thinking. So this is what happens to you. If you lost your job, sentenced to death by the doctor, you got cancer, you're going to, you know, die in a few days, or whatever. Does not matter. You can always do something, but don't worry about it. Don't let it spoil your night's sleep. What was it? I read this, I probably said this recently. The last man to actually be executed in the state of Oklahoma in the United States, you know, by electric chair. You know, I respect this guy. I don't know what crime he did. But the newspapers interviewed him the day before his execution. And he said, can you please write this headline? Because he said, my name is Mr. French. That was his surname, F-R-E-N-C-H. So can you please write in the headlines tomorrow morning, French fries. That's not a joke, that's true, that happened. Mr. French was the last man in Oklahoma to actually to die at the electric chair, and that's what he wanted. Now, he's my type of guy, because, yeah, he's going to die the next day. That doesn't mean to make everybody else miserable. You know, he had a joke for everybody, you know, compassion, even at the very end. Now, I'm sure that guy had a reasonably good night's sleep with an attitude like that. So here is a case of teaching these extreme examples of how you don't need to worry. You can let it go. So you haven't been sentenced to death. Okay, you're going to have to face the boss in the morning or some other terrible thing in the morning, but look, for goodness sake, don't worry about it. And if you learn this positive message in places like this, if you learn how to meditate and let go of the past and the future, then you find all that anxiety and all that lingering baggage from the past, which stops you sleeping at night time, you can deal with. Yeah, you know, there's many problems I have to deal with. You know, I talked before about all these duties which I have. I'm just going over to Singapore because I'm the patron of the Buddhist Fellowship over there, and then to Hong Kong because there's a group over there I look after. There's so many responsibilities, and when you have responsibilities, there's always problems. There's always things which go wrong. You know, people don't like each other, and just somebody says something and they're a control freak and the other people don't like it, and then goodness gracious, there's so many personal problems and all these places which I have to deal with. But I'm not going to let that spoil my night's sleep. So if ever I have any problems I have to face in the morning, really big problems, if I have had a really difficult day and many, many things have gone wrong, what I do is I lay back in my bed and do what I call flat out meditation. To meditate flat out, you just lay there and relax the body exactly as we did today, and exactly with a sweeping meditation. And then, if you still haven't gone to sleep, then you do letting go of the past and the future. You let it go. And one of the other similes, mental exercises, which I've taught here, and I'm sure you've all heard about it, the two shopping bags. Remember the two shopping bags, which similarly, I teach that usually on a Saturday afternoon. You're laying back in the bed, you know, but you've got the past and the future, something bothering you. You imagine, you almost like fantasize about going to the shops and having these two really heavy bags, one on the left hand, one on the right hand. And they really weigh a lot. They make your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. So what do? You look at that, this is in your imagination, a mental exercise, you look at the bag in your left hand and you notice on the outside are four letters, and it's not Coles. That's actually five letters, isn't it? Anyway, it's close enough. You see, on the outside is written, okay, I'm not supposed to advertise here, so I better say, you know, not Woolworths either, otherwise I'll get sued by someone for preferring some place rather than the other. But anyway, you look on the outside, and you've got the four letters, P-A-S-T, past. Because in that bag is all your memories of what's happened, mostly today, but even going back to as far as you can remember, and you're carrying them in this really heavy bag called your past. Not just bad memories, mostly bad memories, but a few good memories there as well. And you're carrying them. And you look in the bag in your right hand, and that's got the letters, you've guessed, F-U-T-U-R-E. That's your future. All your anxieties, dreams, even your hopes, the good stuff, that's in there as well. But the point is, you're carrying it. And that, in this imaginary exercise, that makes your arms ache. So what do when you notice you're carrying bags and you can't bear to carry them any longer, or they're causing you trouble? In this exercise, focus on one bag at a time, the bag representing your past. You lower it to the ground. When it meets the ground, there's no weight. Move the arm up to your side until the arm is resting in its natural place. Then you let go of the future, the same. You lower it to the ground. When it meets the ground, the burden vanishes. You move your hand away from the handle until your arm is resting by its side. You've let go of the future too. And you look down in your imagination. Those two bags are there and you're standing between them in this wonderful place we call the present moment. I often do this in the beginning of a exercise in meditation. Here I'm asking you to do that when you go to bed at night. Get into that habit of letting go of the past and letting go of the future when you lay in your bed to do flat out meditation. And you find when you let go of the past and the future, all that anxiety, the fear, the problems of what someone did to you in the past, you put it down for goodness sake. It's not being irresponsible, because those bags are there for you afterwards when you wake up in the morning. But at least you're getting a rest, which means that when you have rested and you pick those bags up again, they're much lighter, easier to carry, because your arms have got their energy and strength back. So it's reassuring. The exercise is full of psychological reassurance. It can be done, it should be done. And it's something, instead of just saying, oh, I'll just let go of the past, oh, I'll just let go of the future, it gives you something to imagine which assists the real letting go. Which means you're laying back in bed and you've let go of the past, you've let go of the future. And it's so easy to go to sleep with no baggage at all. In the same way that sort of kids can go to sleep, because they don't worry so much about the past and the future. They just sleep, you know, like logs. That's why they say sleep like a baby. But because we carry so much stuff with us, that's why we have a hard time falling asleep at night. The next little method, these are all complementary. You don't have to just do one, not the other, to have a good night's sleep. And this was pointed out by the person who just mentioned this to me. And it's a very powerful insight. Is a lot of times people can't go to sleep at night because they're not happy. Just a general unhappiness, a general lack of joy, a general sense of being at ease with oneself stops one enjoying the rest of night. So please also, when you go to bed at night, do what I do. And I've been doing this for years. When I go to bed at night, okay, I'm a monk, you know, I haven't got a partner. You know, you may have a partner, but it doesn't matter. When you close your eyes, the last person you will see before you go to sleep is who? You. And the first person you will recognize when you wake up in the morning is not the person sleeping next to you, it is you again. So I've got into the habit of the years of being a monk. When I lay in bed, when I close my eyes, before I go to sleep, I say, good night, me. Have a great night. See you in the morning. I'm kind to myself. Now, you may think that's crazy and I should be taken to the hospital. But no, it works. And when I wake up in the morning, who's the first person I say good morning to, even before I open my eyes? Good morning, me. Here I am again. Have a great day, me. Wouldn't you say that to, say, your kid? You know, the kid wakes up in the morning, you wave them off as they go to school. Have a great day at school, you know, kid. Don't you say that, you know, to people you like? You know, you say, have a beautiful night's sleep. Maybe if you're having a divorce, you say, I hope you don't sleep at all tonight, you terrible partner. No, come on, don't say things like that. Usually, actually, sometimes you do say that to yourself. Subconsciously, you may not even know it. Because you know you're having a problem with yourself, you don't like yourself, you're guilty, you're afraid, or whatever it is. But no, try that other method of actually giving yourself a gesture of love, a gesture of self-respect. Just in the same way as you say goodnight to other people in this world you love and care for, say goodnight to yourself. Have a wonderful night, me. You will be surprised at how effective that is of letting you have a very quick and deep night's sleep. What you take into sleep with you, this beautiful sense of kindness and respect to yourself, will be there throughout the night's sleep, giving you a very deep and wonderful night's sleep. That's basically what the Buddha taught. He said if you practice loving kindness, just gentle love towards yourself, you will sleep soundly and have a great night's sleep. But this is what it really means for you, how you can have that loving kindness. Just say to yourself, may you have a good night's sleep. And when you get up in the morning, for goodness sake, say good morning. Continue that self-respect and kindness to yourself. It actually works. A lot of the times that people say you're hopeless, you're useless, you make too many mistakes at work, you're lazy, you don't get up in time, you look a mess, you don't dress properly, your hair's a mess, you don't do this right, you don't do that right. And goodness me, sometimes this underrobe over here, it slipped down and one of the monks could see one of my nipples and they say, that's a bad monk! Oh, come on! You go down the beach, it's a man, okay? I'm not a girl who can show the breast. This is okay, all right? What are you making a big fuss and bother about? But there's no trouble. You don't do anything else wrong. They just know these small things they try and criticize you for. And that's being a monastery. I don't know what it's like at your office. So I understand what it must be like for you guys. But anyhow... Is it up? Okay, very much. This is on camera, going around the world. So, sometimes life can be so negative. And because it's so negative, that we actually pick up that vibe and get negative to ourselves and negative to everybody else. And because we get negative to ourselves in particular, that's why we don't allow ourselves a good night's sleep. So see... And if you have trouble with insomnia or with anything else, just check that out. You know, what sort of relationship have you got to yourself? And just doing little exercises like that when you go to bed at night. Good night, me. Have a beautiful night's sleep. And I really care for you. I really want you to have a nice night's sleep. Go on. Go for it. And when you get up in the morning, good morning, me. Good to see you again. Because look, you've got to put up with yourself. You know, you can't get away from it. You can divorce your wife. And look, even if you commit suicide, you still don't get away from yourself. Buddhists, we know about reincarnation. After you're dead, you're back again. You can't escape that easy just by killing yourself. Oh God, here I am again. Never expected that. So that means the only thing you can do is to change your attitude towards yourself. And... again, you'll be amazed. That gives you a good night's sleep. Just a little bit of happiness and self-respect and kindness to yourself means you can wake up well. And don't worry about the time. The body will look after itself. You know, you don't need to set the alarm clock unless you really, really have to get up in the morning. A much better way is a way which, you know, we know... this is actually a little trick which we use in meditation. You can try this tonight. When you go to bed tonight, tell yourself when you want to wake up. I'm going to wake up at 5 o'clock. I'm going to wake up at 6 o'clock. Prepare your mind. This was my first meditation retreat. I learned this and it was brilliant. It worked. This is when I was still a student. Say you've got to get up at, I've got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I've got to go out to get myself ready and go to the airport at 5. So, instead of setting my alarm clock, I tell myself, just before I go to bed, now laying down, I said, I will wake up at 4 o'clock. I will wake up at 4 o'clock. I will wake up at 4 o'clock. I repeat it to myself 3 times, clearly, with as much attention as possible. And then I forget it. Set your alarm clock at 4:05. Otherwise, you get anxious. Well, what happens if it doesn't work? I'm going to be terrible. I'm going to be late. I'm not going to get to the airport. People in Singapore are going to be upset at me. So set your alarm clock 5 minutes afterwards. This is just in case. It's reassurance. And whatever time you want to get up, try that. You know, say you're getting up 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Set your alarm clock 6:05. Tell yourself, I'll get up at 6 o'clock, I'll get up at 6 o'clock, I'll get up at 6 o'clock. And you will be so surprised that you'll wake up 1 or 2 minutes either side of 6 before your alarm clock goes off. You've put that information into the brain, and somehow or other the brain knows when it's about 6 o'clock and it wakes up. And when you wake up that way, it's a natural way of waking up instead of bing when your alarm clock goes off in the morning. Which means actually, you know, the brain is actually coming out. It knows, it's been told when it's going to come out. When it's going to come out, which means you wake up, you know, without having a heart attack. So this is actually just, you know, what we learn about how to sleep as Buddhist monks. We're sleep experts. And sometimes, not that we sleep a lot, we actually learn we don't need to sleep so much. Simply because we know how to sleep well and to sleep deeply. And just to sum up, because the talk's about to go over time, to sum up, just number one, just, you know, learn, just, you know, how to have a quiet place if you possibly can. But sometimes you just can't do that. You know, if you can't, then follow that dog and find a quiet place in some person's house. If you can't do that, you know, at least learn how to relax the body by doing that little sweeping meditation. Starting from the toes, relax and feel the toes relax and just work up little by little. And again, usually don't go that far before you fall asleep. Number two, and number three or something. Number three, you can actually just be doing the flat out meditation. Just let go of the past and the future. Imagine those two bags and you put them aside before you go to sleep. And lastly, just have that good feeling towards yourself, that kindness towards yourself, you know, respect towards yourself. Good night, me. Have a beautiful night's sleep. Because if you wish somebody a good night's sleep, they're more likely to have it. And if your wife, your husband, your partner can't do that for you, do it for yourself. And then you find you'll have a beautiful night's sleep. And that will solve a lot of health problems. It will solve a lot of grumpiness and irritation. And as far as, you know, your ability at work or whatever else you do in life, you'll find that the work is easier, you'll do better in your career, whatever it is, simply because you know how to rest. So, that finishes the talk. So, good night, everybody. Have a wonderful night's sleep. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we've got a couple of questions here. Oh yeah, we've got a question from here first of all. Yes. Go on. It's okay, I'll repeat the question for the microphone.
It occurred to me earlier that I never really understood why monks don't sleep after lunchtime. And then it occurred to me as well that
it might be connected to getting good night's sleep. So there's two questions really. Why don't monks eat after lunchtime, and does it help you to sleep?
You're asking the question, because monks, we don't eat after noon. In the afternoon and evening, we have nothing to eat. Does that really help you sleep? Actually, that usually eating helps me sleep. If you have a big meal, when you only eat one meal a day, it's a pretty big meal. And, you know, that I suffer from a disease called postprandial somnolence. Have you ever heard of that disease before? Postprandial somnolence, PPS syndrome. You know what it means? It's just fancy Latin, which somebody told me means after lunch sleepiness. It's a Latin word, but if I just say it, you feel a bit tired or sleepy after lunch, people think, oh, that's just indulgence. But when you give it a Latin name, think, oh my goodness, you poor thing. Some sort of disease. So I know sometimes if you have a big meal, sometimes you do feel sleepy after lunch. And so a lot of times, like in Latin countries, they always have siesta after lunch. They have a big lunch and have siesta. So I think it's the opposite, probably. Having a good lunch will probably make you sleepy. Or a good dinner. I shouldn't be saying that, because you're all going to get fat now. But no, I think... What a beautiful laugh. That was wonderful. I wish we could record that. So anyway, yes... I don't think it really matters at all, lunch or not lunch. Okay, so now we have the questions from the international questions. Very good. I've only got two. Oops. I've lost one. It's gone down. Oh, here we go. The first one is Blake from Texas. I am part of a sleeper cell. No, it's not what it says. No, I didn't say that at all, Blake. Come on, you're messing around about sleeping. The Dharma enables me to live with... Oh, this is a powerful one. The Dharma enables me to live with a painful spinal cord injury that robs me of most basic body functions. Often even mindfulness can't remove the suffering from my disability. What do you think? So that is a person who has incredible pain, spinal cord injury, and robs you most of basic bodily functions. And you know that these things happen in all countries. What do you think? The Dharma enables me to live with that. It's a teaching. It's well done, Blake. It's a very tough job, but it can be done. If you look in my book, Opening the Door of Your Heart, I included in that book, in the United States it's called Who Ordered the Truckload of Dung? And because it sells, that's the sort of title which sells in the United States. Don't ask me why. But one of the stories there is a poem by a fellow called Jonathan Wilson Fuller. And I'm just doing this from memory. He says that pain is part of the scheme of things. It's part of nature. Pain teaches us not to touch the thorn or take the hand out of the fire. Pain is useful. But there is a type of pain which has no purpose at all. That elite band of pain called chronic pain, which doesn't go away, like immense pain of spinal cord injury. Yet, he said, there is a purpose. The purpose is to find happiness in spite of that pain. He said, it's a very hard journey, a hard journey indeed. And he said that only those with such chronic pains can understand just how torturous and long that journey is. But there is a purpose, a reward, which can be done. Happiness in spite of that pain. It's a journey very personal and very special to enjoy even with that pain. And the reason why I put that in the book was because this fellow, Jonathan Wilson Fuller, and I'm not doing justice to the poem, please read it. That person wrote that poem when he was 7 years old. That makes me tingle at the back of my spine even now. He was a guy who was born with chronic pain, who would never find a way physically out of it, but could live life with it, happiness in spite of the pain. It can be done. It is being done. The very fact it can be done gives that hope, that purpose. And the Dhamma, some of these teachings, they show how. Basically, Blake, it is opening the door of your heart to the pain. Opening the door of your heart instead of trying to push it away. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. That opening the door of your heart, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, the door of my heart is open to you. It's incredible how the door can be opened so wide to allow things which most of us would never be able to tolerate. Pain which just is always there, which can never go. It can be done. It is done. And people like Blake are the heroes. The heroes of your purpose, Blake, is to teach others who have hardly any pain at all in comparison with yours. Learn how to make peace and live life even with the little disappointments which we think are so bad. You can do that because people like Blake do that. It's a wonderful thing. And that's how it can be done. I always remember there was a fellow here some years ago. I haven't seen him for a while. He's probably dead now. But he had chronic back pain. And he went to the local clinic, Osborne Park Clinic. And there's a pain clinic here in Perth. And he said he was one of, there's only about a handful of people at that time, it was many years ago, maybe half a dozen people or eight people, who were legally permitted to take any drug at all. There was no such thing as illegal. They were permitted because their pain was extreme. And he said that they had a way of telling their friends and relations what that pain was really feeling like. They had this scale of pain, very graphic. And he said, now they could actually, with these gizmos on the brain, they could tell that the intensity of the pain this fellow was feeling all the time, 24 hours a day, was the same as if you were having your arm cut off with a saw. He said, now they can know what that pain would feel like. He said, now the gizmos on his brain, the pain center, said that's the sort of pain he was feeling all the time. So he could actually tell people. Because, yeah, I'm hurting. Yeah, I'm hurting too. But how can we tell the intensity of that pain in a way that other people could comprehend? And that's what this pain clinic would give, this levels of agony. And that was his. But when he came to talk to me, he had this big smile on his face. And he said, I've finally done it. I said, what have you done? He said, I finally got the machine to be flat. Oh, you mean needing the ECG? Because, you know, in meditation, you get the heart to go totally flat and peaceful. He said, no, that was easy. I did that weeks ago. That was the EEG. I got the brain waves to be totally flat. And he said, you see all those people in the back there? I always remember this. They're all from Osborne Park Hospital. The doctors and nurses, they want to find what the hell is going on in this place. Remember that story? Because his friend is right sitting in the back over there. And it's amazing, because he had that pain, you know, he actually, there's no messing around anymore. He learned how to meditate, to make peace with things. And he got so incredibly deep in his meditation. So Blake, it's not just the Dharma, the teachings. Because you have that painful spinal cord, other people, we can just mess around. But you can't mess around. In other words, you can go very deep, very quickly, and very fast. Because you have to. So those are a few comments. Let's better the other question before I go too long. Nick from Victoria. The Buddha mentioned that sleepiness and drowsiness is one of the hindrances when following the path. How to balance so we get adequate sleep and stay alert during He's got medication here. Meditation, So, to adequate sleep, to stay alert during meditation. Now, when I was a young monk in Thailand, every morning we'd get up at 3 o'clock, and I was always sleepy when I was meditating, always falling asleep. And I was really trying hard not to fall asleep and be awake, but I just, so hard to do. Now I look back upon those times. We were taught only to sleep 4 hours a night. Okay, I cheated. I had 4.5. But that's not enough, you know, for a young guy, 23, 24 years of age. So I was sleep deprived. Number two, the food, which I've told many times here, was absolutely disgusting. If it slithered on the ground, we ate it. Frogs. We did have vegetarian food. I always like to challenge vegetarians, because one of the vegetarian food we had was buffalo's afterbirth. Well, it didn't kill the animal. It was just waste product, so it didn't harm anybody at all. So that's good vegetarian food, is it? Snails, frogs, all that sort of stuff. Ants eggs, all that sort of stuff we used to eat. So I was basically malnourished. If you see photographs of me in those days, I mean, it was like a stick, a thin stick at that. And lastly, I was in a climate. It was tropics, and it was really hot and humid. And so it's obviously that's going to make anybody tired. And I sort of joke, you know, if the Buddha was born in England and went to India, he would be sleepy too, because the climate is not the same. So first of all, in your meditation, remember the climate there, you know, your food, your health, that is important. So you're going to be sleepy, you know, if you're tired and weak. That's just the nature of the body. So that's why make sure you get enough sleep. If you have too much sleep, you get sleepy afterwards because, you know, you get dull. So as far as meditation is concerned, it's important to get just enough sleep. And one of the best ways is just going there and just sleeping. And when you wake up in the morning, forget about the time. You wake up, jump up, and that's the right amount of sleep. And that means that, you know, you're not dull in meditation. And for many people here, it means you're not dull when you go to work. You're alert. You've had enough sleep. And even little things like us saying that in Thailand, we went to this monastery in Bangkok to do our visas, and this monastery is a, you know, big, rich monastery. This was in 1975 or something. They had one room which was air-conditioned, an air-con room. And so we would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. No one else was using it at that time. Only mad monks from the forest would get up that time. The city monks would get up at 6, 7 o'clock. But anyway, so we got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. We got the key to that room. We turned on the air conditioner. And you know, we had no sleepiness at all. In the forest, we'd always be sleepy. But when you get the temperature just right, you're totally alert and awake. You get energy. Just like, you know, here in Perth, we've had some hot weather. Today's nice and cool. Have you noticed that when the temperature gets human... you're not too hot, you tend to get your energy back, you feel much better. So just even simple things like getting the climate right, then that gets rid of the sleepiness. If it's very hot and you're not used to the hot weather, you do get sleepy. It's nature. So that's why in smart countries, in the hot weather, they have siestas. So please go to your office next Monday and tell them, look, if it's over 35 degrees, we demand siesta. Get the CFMEU union to have the latest demands for siestas when the temperatures... that's one of the big unions here in Perth. To have siestas when it goes over 35 degrees. It's worth a try. Anyway. So that's actually how we can overcome and get adequate sleep so we can stay alert during the meditation. Okay, so thank you all for listening today, and hopefully that was useful for you. Just practical teachings on meditation, good attitude, which actually do work, so you can have a good night's sleep. So, na-night, everybody. Sweet dreams.